Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. We're not taking live calls. However, we invite you to stay with us and enjoy the broadcast. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to this Thursday edition of Catholic Answers Live Open Forum. Because it's Thursday, we always do Open Forum on Thursday. A little bit of special Open Forum today, though all the questions are coming to us via people typing in on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, or Periscope. So if you think, well, they don't get to enough of those questions. Well, today we're going to get to a whole bunch of them. Tim Staples is our guest this hour. The director of apologetics and evangelization here.
You got it right.
I know, but I'm pausing because I keep wanting to give out the phone number. Like it's just a habit, and I can't get. I got to get myself to stop. Don't give out the phone number.
I'm still trying to get over the fact that it's Thursday.
I know it doesn't feel like Thursday, does it? It feels like a Tuesday somehow.
Yes, it does.
What do you think about this, Tim? We're going to take all calls from Facebook Live, YouTube Live, and Periscope.
I like it.
Yeah, do you?
Except they're
not. Are you scared at all?
Are phones ringing in the computer? These are calls from Facebook?
No, when people are on Facebook, they're just typing them in there.
Yeah, but you said we're going to be taking calls from Facebook.
Oh, see what I'm saying?
I was picking on you.
Yeah, but that's why I'm like stuck in call mode because I spend all my life call, and now don't call. But we do have excellent, excellent questions.
All right.
You want to go to a question, Tim?
Let's do it. And I can't see them either, so I'm going blind.
Yep. But, well, we're all going blind as we age. Okay. Olga Marie on Facebook Live asks the following question. Can we go to SSPX Mass and be valid for our Sunday obligation?
Right. Well, because of their irregular status, although I don't know if our inquirer is aware that there's been more good news concerning movement toward full communion today. As many of our listeners know, our Holy Father, during the Year of Mercy, extended faculties exercising his immediate juridical authority. He communicated faculties to hear confessions to all SSPX priests. That was really remarkable, and since the Year of Mercy ended, he did not take those away, so they are yet extended. This is our Holy Father. He is the priest of mercy. Well, I was just reading it before I came over here. I didn't finish reading the whole letter from the Vatican on this, but it states that our Holy Father is encouraging bishops around the world to grant faculties. It's not a mandate. He's not exercising his immediate juridical authority as he did with confession, but he's encouraging the ordinaries to extend faculties where possible to the SSPX to witness marriages. Now, it does say in the letter, as I was just reading, I want to go back and really take it apart after this broadcast, but it did say that because of the irregular status, the ordinary witness is a priest who is validly incardinated into the diocese. But where that is not possible, where a priest is not available, that sort of thing, he's encouraging them to extend faculties to SSPX priests. So it's not like the confession, but it is extending, encouraging bishops to extend faculty. So it's more movement, I think, in a good direction when it comes to. Now, as far as going to masses, again, because of their irregular status, people should go to parishes where the priest is incardinated into the diocese. However, the church has been, bending over backward for the SSPX and those who love the traditional mass, so that a permission has been given for those who love the Latin mass to attend those parishes. So you know, it's, again, a sign that we're moving toward, and I think it will be an exciting day. I pray that that day will come soon where we will have, we'll no longer have to talk about this irregular status any longer. But those who are attending SSPX masses because they love the Latin liturgy, they are not, you know, dissing Vatican Council II or anything like that, are not sinning. You know, the church is not saying that you're in sin if you go to those masses. There are other things that have to be taken into account, though. It doesn't mean you're free to reject all of Council of Vatican II. That's one of the big sticking points concerning full communion with the SSPX. You know, they have to acknowledge that Vatican II is a valid ecumenical council. But I happen to know people who attend those masses from time to time because they love the traditional liturgy. They're not available a lot of times very generously in particular dioceses, and they're certainly not in sin.
And SSPX, Society of St. Pius X.
The 10th, correct.
And why, maybe I should know this, but why Pius the 10th? What about him?
Yeah, well, I think it was a priestly fraternity that was started in France before there was a schismatic act.
Oh, okay.
It was simply a group of seminarians, later priests, I believe it was seminarians and priests, back in about, if memory serves, about 1972, a number of these young seminarians and such approached Archbishop Lefebvre, who was retired at the time, and they asked him, because of the post-Vatican II craziness that was going on with the promulgation of the Missale Romanum, the Mass of Paul VI, as it's called, and the abuses that were going on, these folks came to Bishop Lefebvre and said, you know, we need you to come out of retirement and help us. And he did. And at the outset, because he was not an ordinary, he was a retired bishop. He did not have a diocese. He had to get permission from the local ordinary to begin the SSPX, which he was granted. At that time, he was in full communion with the church. They were just concerned. But so the St. Pius X, of course, was a reformer bishop who, you know, wrote wonderful documents, you know, the Syllabus of Errors against Modernism and so many things. So it was a pope like that was a perfect fit for them. But what happened was they started to go extreme pretty early on, to the point where they ordained some priests illicitly. Pope Paul VI got involved. That was not excommunicable, but it was a grave sin. But then what ends up happening is there's back and forth between Paul VI and the SSPX. They were suspended ad divini, that is, their faculties were removed, and they continued in disobedience. And this back and forth went on until Pope Paul VI died in 1978. John Paul picked it up and really wanted to have a reunion. He picked up the dialogue. Cardinal Ratzinger, of course, involved when he became prefect of the CDF. But unfortunately, it took a bad turn in 1988 when the SSPX ordained Bishop Lefebvre.
Yep.
He ordained four bishops illicitly, and that is matter of excommunication automatically, right? Laetae sententiae, and so that started that. But the amazing thing is, I mean, you really sympathize with the SSPX and the craziness that was going on and such. But you also see in this whole thing how the popes have reached out and continued to reach out. John Paul, he was forced. I mean, he didn't do anything. He simply declared what canon law already stated, that was a laetae sententiae excommunication. But the dialogues immediately were started. John Paul established the Ecclesia Dei, which was his specific task was to be the mediator to try and get the SSPX back. And now here we are, you know, there's been lots of trials and failures and semi-successes and such. And now it's Pope Francis some might think the most unlikely candidate is the one who really seems to be moving the ball forward like none other. So anyway, that's just a brief thumbnail sketch.
It's an all Facebook Live, YouTube Live, Periscope edition of Catholic Answers Open Forum today on Catholic Answers Live. Tim Staples, Director of Apologetics and Evangelization, is our guest. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back with more questions for Tim.
We're glad you're with us. Stick around for more Catholic Answers Live.
We hear it every year. The perennial question, what are you giving up for Lent? And there's nothing wrong with doing without certain things you may have an affinity for. But this year, why not turn the question around and ask, what are you taking on for Lent? Did you know that by investing as little as 5 minutes a day, you can take on a Lenten practice that will both build up and inform your faith? A Daily Defense is the perfect book for your Lenten journey. Jimmy Akin takes up a different challenge for every day of the year, teaching you how you can defend the faith and give answers to Catholics and skeptics alike. And it's user-friendly, so finding the answers can be quick and easy. Make this Lent one to remember. Order your copy of A Daily Defense today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith, along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In John 8:51, Jesus announced that whoever keeps his word will never see death. The others responded, "Now we are sure you are possessed." They reminded him that Abraham and the prophets were already dead. "Are you greater than Abraham?" Jesus assured them, "Before Abraham came to be, I am." So they picked up stones to throw at him. To them, this was unspeakable blasphemy. Or, he was the unthinkable. He was God. It was unthinkable for them to consider that God would humble himself and visit them in such a way, let alone suffer and die as he was to do. For many, such a God is beyond them. God would never do such a thing, because if they were God, they wouldn't. But God is not merely a bigger version of us. Through our gift of faith, we know that he can love us that much, and on Good Friday he showed us that, in fact, he does. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
We're not taking live calls. However, we invite you to stay with us and enjoy the broadcast. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, special edition today. It is open forum. Open forum means we are happy to take any question at all on the life or faith of the Catholic Church from anyone. You don't have to be Catholic, you can be Catholic. Anybody that has a question about the Catholic faith, we're happy to take it. However, today, all questions are coming from YouTube Live, Facebook Live, or Periscope. They are being typed in there. So if anybody has had the idea that we were being neglectful before of all of our fantastic and very appreciated viewers there. We will disabuse you of that, and we will get to as many questions as we possibly can. I'm going now, Tim, to YouTube Live, and I'm trying to figure out if I know how to use a computer here while I do it. Okay. No, I apparently don't know. Okay, I'm going to go back to Facebook Live for a quick sec, Tim, and then I'll go back to YouTube in a second. This woman, Katie, on Facebook Live asks, "It came up in a small group of mine that Mary and Joseph had vowed to live a chaste, abstinent life before they were to be married and would continue this choice within their married. I'd never heard this before and was wondering if you might have some insight as to where I might find this information." Thank
sure.
You.
In fact, I'd recommend, Katie, you get a hold of my book, Behold Your Mother, A Biblical and Historical Defense of the Marian Doctrines. In that book, I go into great detail on this in the section on the perpetual virginity of Mary. And I cite in there, among many other things, Pope St. John Paul the Great's On the Dignity and Vocation of Women, where he teaches this, the idea that really goes as far back as you want to go in the writings of the fathers. From the very earliest writings of the fathers, we discover this idea that in Luke chapter 1, beginning in verse 26, where the angel Gabriel comes down to Mary to announce to her that she's being called to be the mother of the Son of God, the Messiah. If you go down to verse 33, whose kingdom will have no end, right? That leads to the question that Mary asks in verse 34, how shall this be, for I know not man? Now, from the greatest minds of the fourth century, you find St. Jerome, St. Epiphanius, St. Ambrose, St. Augustine, St. Epiphanius, if I didn't mention him, and others. The question itself betrays the vow. That's kind of the refrain. And why is that? Because we know that Mary and Joseph were already married. They already have had what we would call in Catholic theology today a ratified union. Like on August 26th of 2000, the greatest day of my life, when I married the most beautiful woman in the world. When we exchanged vows, we were married, even though we had not had conjugal relations yet. That marriage was a real marriage. That's akin to what happened at the espousal. So Mary and Joseph were already spouses. They had had the espousal. And that's what makes the question so out of the ordinary, because if this was an ordinary marriage and the angel says, hey, Mary, you're going to have a child, she wouldn't be surprised. She wouldn't be saying, hey, how shall this happen? For I know not man. She would know how it's going to happen through a normal conjugal relationship with her husband. But the fact is, she had this vow that Pope John Paul talks about again in On the Dignity and Vocation of Women. I don't remember the paragraph, but it is in my book. You'll get it there, that she already had this vow of virginity. Our Lord had prepared her for this special union, and also Joseph. Joseph is kind of in the image of Abraham, the patriarch. He doesn't have full understanding of what's going on here, but he knows God has called him into this unique relationship. And so, again, I'd encourage you to check out my book. I go into a lot more detail on that, but that leads to all sorts of other fun stuff I wish we had time to get into.
Alrighty. I think Ashwith is the next question. I did get to the questions on YouTube Live, so this comes to us from Ashwith, I believe, is watching in India. And it says, it asks if you will explain why receiving the Eucharist in one species is enough, which, he says, is what happens a lot of times in India.
Yes, great question. And what's his name?
Ashwith.
Ashwith, great question. And the reason is because Jesus Christ is fully present under each of the two species. So in other words, if you receive under both species, you're not getting more of Jesus. No, you get the whole entire Jesus under either species. And by the way, biblically speaking, we have sort of confirmation of this in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 27, where St. Paul says, whoever eats this bread or drinks this cup of the Lord unworthily shall be guilty of the body and blood of the Lord. Two little different Greek words there. The Greek word is he, it's just one letter, and eta for or, and kai for and. Big difference. Whoever eats either one, right, eats either the sacred host or partakes of the cup, either one individually, that's what's being said here, in an unworthy manner, is guilty of both. And why is that? Because of exactly what I said, Jesus Christ is fully, absolutely present under both species. Now, it is true the church encourages, especially in Sunday liturgies, to receive under both species, but that's not because, you know, we're getting more of Jesus. It is purely of symbolic value. It's a fuller symbol to receive under both, but it's not necessary. There's no additional grace or anything like that. I remember a friend of mine in the seminary saying concerning someone who said, well, wouldn't you get more though if you receive both? No, it's not like you, if that were true, we should go up and go, you know, give me more. But no, you're not getting any more. You get the whole Jesus under each species.
Thank you very much for that question from India. As far as I can tell, that's where that came from India. Tim, I just want to let you know, Carlos on YouTube Live says, looking forward to you coming to the Men Under Construction Conference in New Mexico in August.
Yeah, me too.
a Catholic men's conference and Tim Staples is going to be there. I am shocked by that. I am just shocked.
Yes.
So also on YouTube Live, President Rhapsody asks, do the saints in heaven have a glorified body? I'm trying to reconcile the concept that they live in eternity where there is no time as we know it, and the resurrection of the body.
Right. Great question. The answer is no, they do not possess glorified bodies right now. The only two that we know of that have their glorified bodies are Jesus and Mary. And of course, that's because of the resurrection and the assumption. However, when it comes to that question of time, we have to be careful to make distinctions here. While it is true that once we die, we enter into a realm that is alien to you and I that are, you know, this side of the veil or under the sun, to use the language of Ecclesiastes, right? It's not that there's no time in any sense in heaven. There is, in as much as we are human and you know, human souls are present there now, they are not God. So there is still a sense of movement or motion from potency to act, which, of course, there is no motion in God. God is what philosophers call pure actuality, right? There's no lack in him. There's no motion from imperfection to perfection. But when it comes to the souls in heaven, there is. And one very profound way that this is so is they are without their bodies. This is symbolized, by the way, in Revelation 6, verse 9, for example, where we find the souls of the martyrs in heaven. And it says they're praying, "How long, O Lord, how long until you avenge our blood?" So there's a sense of longing, even though they're in heaven. Well, one very profound reason is because they don't have their bodies. And remember, we are hylomorphic beings. We are a body-soul composite. So even though we say the soul has substantial being, that means it lives on after we die, we say that the souls in heaven now are incomplete substances, right? Because they are lacking those bodies. So there is that sense of motion. So in that sense, time. But it's not time as we understand it. Time is no more as we understand it. They're not waking up in the morning, right, putting alarm clocks on and such. There's no sleep. There's no, you know, there's none of that sense of time that we understand, but there is still that motion. In fact, it's a great book, probably the best book certainly I've ever read on eschatology, is a book called Eschatology by Cardinal Ratzinger. And he talks about how he believes the church needs to develop in this area in our understanding of time, because there, God alone dwells in that realm of absolute being where there is no motion whatsoever but pure actuality. Even the angels don't dwell there. And there's been in theology a constant attempt to try and clarify things, like creating different terms. We have the, for example, in Latin, the aeternitas of God. That's a term that's used in theology exclusively of God. And then we have the ave aeternitas of men. But as Cardinal Ratzinger points out in his book, where do angels fit in there? Because they're in a very, very different state than men as pure spirits. And so the idea of motion for them is different than for us. So it's an area where we really do need to develop, according to Cardinal Ratzinger, you know, in precise theological terms. But in general, understand there can be and there is that motion from potency, the potential for those souls that are disembodied. And by the way, Hebrews 12:24 talks about that, how we have in heaven an innumerable company of angels, Jesus, God, and such. But then it also says the spirits of just men made perfect. So there's spirits there without bodies. Well, they are longing for their bodies. And in the end of time, at the end of time and the resurrection of the body, they will be completed.
And when is that? Is there a schedule on that?
No man knows. No man knows the hour, right?
Okay, all right then. I thought I maybe would get it out of you, Tim, but you don't know. All right, well, I'm not giving out the phone number today because we're not taking calls today. We're taking all of our questions online from Facebook Live, YouTube Live, or Periscope. Thank you to everyone joining us there. I'm Cy Killett. Tim Staples is our guest, and we'll be right back.
Answers Live.
It's been called a crash course in salvation history, the perfect addition to CCD and RCIA reading lists. Catholic Answers' new graphic novel, The Big Picture, has set the Catholic book world on fire with its unique and innovative blend of apologetics and entertainment. With high-quality, full-color illustrations and a storyline that's easy to follow, The Big Picture reveals a story full of passion, suspense, adventure, and hope, engaging the reader immediately. As our heroes come face-to-face with the drama and mystery of God's plan for the salvation of the world. It gets readers talking and thinking, captivating and entertaining them with eternal truths presented in a non-threatening way. Get your friends and family talking about things that matter. Order your copy of The Big Picture today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Cy Kellett, host of Catholic Answers Live, and I'm looking forward to meeting you this September 28th to 30th at our fourth annual National Apologetics Conference here in beautiful San Diego. This is one conference you are not going to want to miss. The theme is the reunion of all Christians, and we've got an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to fire you up. Catholic historian Steve Weidenkopf, apologist Mark Brumley, apologist Devin Rose, plus all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. For almost four decades, Catholic Answers has been engaging our separated brethren in charity to bring them to the fullness of the truth. Join us for a lively and inspiring conference designed to help you play an active part in the reunion of all Christians. This is where it all begins. Join us this September for a conference that is sure to ignite and inform your faith. Seats are available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today to register.
Thanks for being with us today on Catholic Answers Live. Tim, I probably will get in trouble with Erica if I don't ask you about the cruise. You're going on a cruise in June, and
yes.
I'm hoping to go with you June 3rd through 10th.
Yeah, and this is really exciting. This is a cruise. I did a similar one back in 2004. It was actually, I was invited, wasn't at Catholic Answers full-time yet. I was invited by Carl Keating et al. To do that cruise. It was absolutely phenomenal, and actually that's when I asked Carl for a job.
Oh, smooth move.
That was 13 years ago that I went on that cruise. And it's phenomenal, folks. We are going to sail through Canada and New England. We're going to hit Montreal, Quebec City, Charlottetown on Prince Edward Island, Sydney, Halifax, Bar Harbor, Boston. We've got Chris Check coming with us, yours truly. We got Patrick Madrid and Father Paul Check. Man, it's going to be rocking. I will guarantee you. We're going to see some awesome sights. We're going to talk about the church in the new world. In fact, I'm preparing a couple of talks, one on the Adventist movement, what we can learn about them, and also what we can learn from them in our own evangelization. I'm putting that together right now. And I'm also going to be doing a talk on James Cardinal Gibbons, who is one of the reasons why I'm Catholic. His great book, Faith of Our Fathers, was one of the first Catholic books I read. It is phenomenal. His life is absolutely amazing. I'm not sure what the title of the talk's going to be yet, but I think it's going to be something like The Bishop Sheen Before Bishop Sheen.
Oh, how cool.
And that's James Cardinal Gibbons. Phenomenal
Very cool.
speaker and evangelist and writer. He was a missionary in the United States. His ordinariate, it wasn't a diocese yet, but it was I forget what they call it, but a huge area in the South that he had to cover. And this man would on horseback ride to get sacraments to people wherever they were, and he evangelized, and he became so well known for his incredible preaching that Protestant ministers invited him to come to their churches and speak. I mean, it's phenomenal. This didn't happen back then.
No, right. I mean,
he had a little of that with Bishop John England back in the 1820s, 30s. He too was quite the orator, but James Cardinal Gibbons, I mean, the man led, we don't even know how many hundreds of thousands he led into the church. It's phenomenal, but the growth because of him. Anyway,
wonderful.
I'm putting all that together too. We are going to have us a time, I guarantee, on this cruise. So folks, check it out and
put in the word Cy, C-Y.
what do they call it? A promo code, PSY. Then you get, well, a couple things happen, but you get the free excursion in Halifax where we're going to go to St. Mary's Basilica Cathedral, and we're going to go to the Maritime Museum, have a private lunch, and go to Peggy's Cove Lighthouse. And if enough people put that promo code in, I will be there as well.
Oh, man. Come on, folks. Sign up. You put PSY. It's C-Y. Just two letters.
I know. It's easy.
Two letters. Just dink, dink. And PSY will join us.
All That's right. And I am carrying the bags. Yes. On and off the boat for anybody who puts that in there.
All right.
Today we're going to questions from Facebook Live, YouTube Live, or Periscope. We're right now on Facebook, and Kathy Tim says the following, or asks the following: I would like the name of one book I could purchase to help me understand the Jewish culture during Bible times.
Oh, my goodness.
Also, is there a particular Jewish encyclopedia that is best to purchase? Thank you very much.
Yes, there is a phenomenal book. In fact, I think it was one of our textbooks when I was in the seminary. If not, that's when I got it. That's when I first got it. But it a phenomenal book by Henri Daniel Roux. The last name is Daniel, just like Daniel. And then hyphen ROPS, R-O-P-S. It's French. It's pronounced Roux. And it's called Daily Life in the Time of Jesus. And it is the standard when it comes to discovering. It gives you so much insight into sacred scripture. It will really make scripture come alive to you. Now, there was another thing she wanted.
If there's a Jewish encyclopedia.
Oh, a Jewish encyclopedia.
Yeah.
Yes. Actually, online, all you got to do is Google the Jewish Encyclopedia. I use it all the time. In fact, I cite it in my book, the Jewish Encyclopedia, and you got it right there online.
Very good. Again, we're taking questions from Facebook Live, YouTube Live, and Periscope today. So no calls, just these online questions. Why don't the French know how to pronounce stuff?
Like,
what's wrong with them?
It's ROPS, man.
I know.
It's ROPS.
Come on, get your act together. Jason on Facebook wants to know, in what you read in the Bible, you read Jesus as a scapegoat, or in reading another book or document, you found Jesus as a scapegoat. Is that true that Jesus is a scapegoat? And I think he wants an explanation of what that means.
No, not in my understanding. The scapegoat would be the one that was let go.
Yeah.
Not the one that would be put to death. As far as I understand, I have not heard of Jesus being the scapegoat, although I'm just thinking off the cuff here, perhaps, maybe in a sense, and I've not read anything on this, so I'm just tossing out an idea that he's the scapegoat in the sense that we put all of our sins on him. And he takes them away for us. I suppose I could certainly see that.
That's not an image that the Bible is.
No, the scapegoat that the Bible gives us is the one that they let go.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
When I go onto YouTube, it bounces around a little bit.
Yeah.
So you have to excuse me for the fact that I have to kind of take a second here. But okay. I'll give you the name in a second, Tim, because I lost it. But when you get done with the answer, I'll give the name of the person who asked it. But the person asks, if angels who could see God could fall, does that mean that we can fall when we are in heaven and can see God?
Ah, excellent. By the way, before I get to that, you know, I can see the image of the scapegoat for Jesus, because the scapegoat, I mean, if you think about it, what are we doing? We're blaming. The scapegoat is the one that we blame everything on, right?
Yes.
And so in that sense, I can certainly see that Christ is the scapegoat in the sense that he was blamed for everything, and including things that he did not do, namely for all kinds of sins. And of course, he was without sin. So I can certainly see that. But anyway, let's get to the next question. It was,
angels could see God and still fell.
Yes,
can
yes.
Can we in heaven still fall?
That is a popular misconception, Cy.
Okay.
A great question. The angels never had the beatific vision, because if they did, in fact, as a rational creature, just like we are, humans and angels, we are rational creatures. If the intellect is presented with the fullness of truth, it will be directed toward that truth. And if it's if the will is presented with that ultimate truth and ultimate good, which is God, it will choose that ultimate good. So the angels could not have the beatific vision. When Revelation 12 talks about them being cast down from heaven, we have to remember that heaven is used in different senses in Scripture. You know, heaven and earth can refer to just the sky or up there, that sort of thing, and not necessarily the beatific vision. The beatific vision is a specific theological concept you find, you know, in places like 1 John 3, verses 1 and 2. Brethren, we do not yet know what we shall be, but we know this, we will be like him, for we will see him as he is, right? Revelation 22 talks about how we will see him, you know. Matthew 5:8, blessed are the pure of heart, for they shall see God. Matthew 18:10, our angels, our guardian angels, see God. That's the beatific vision, not in seeing with eyeballs. It's seeing in the sense of possessing God in a directly intuited comprehension of God. Once you attain that, you cannot, it's impossible for you to turn away. All right, so the angels would have been created in what we say in Latin, right, in statu vie, in a state of journeying. They were in a place of testing. They would have had faith. We get that, right, because even the demons have faith, James chapter 2 tells us. They would have had faith. They were in a state of grace, but they were in that in statu vie, a state of journeying, because just like all rational creatures, God has deigned for them to have a choice to choose God and his plan or to choose to reject him. And they did, in fact, reject him. We read about that in Revelation 12, and one-third of the angels fell. So they did not, that's the bottom line, they did not have the beatific vision. Those who chose God attained to the beatific vision, and now they are in that blessed state.
All righty. I didn't find the the name of the person who asked the question.
Ah.
So we'll take a break. And when okay. we come back, I swear I'll find that the name of that because I really enjoyed the answer, but I want to thank the questioner and I don't have it. We'll be right back with more on Catholic Answers Live Open Forum right after this.
This is Bishop James Conley of the Diocese of Lincoln. Keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
We hear it every year. The perennial question, what are you giving up for Lent? And there's nothing wrong with doing without certain things you may have an affinity for. But this year, why not turn the question around and ask, what are you taking on for Lent? Did you know that by investing as little as 5 minutes a day, you can take on a Lenten practice that will both build up and inform your faith? A Daily Defense is the perfect book for your Lenten journey. Jimmy Akin takes up a different challenge for every day of the year, teaching you how you can defend the faith and give answers to Catholics and skeptics alike. And it's user-friendly, so finding the answers can be quick and easy. Make this Lent one to remember. Order your copy of A Daily Defense today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Where can you find the answers to hundreds of the most common questions about the Catholic faith? Catholic Answers 20 Answer Series, that's where. Clear, concise, and easy to carry, the 20 Answer Series from Catholic Answers Press offers hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. They're available individually, at special bulk prices, or you can get a starter pack of all 20 at a very special price. And remember, you can now purchase them as ebooks for reading on your mobile devices. Call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com today to get your copies of all the titles in this exciting new series, or ask for them at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
We're not taking live calls. However, we invite you to stay with us and enjoy the broadcast. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Open Forum. Tim Staples is our guest this hour, and we are taking all our calls today are coming from Facebook Live, YouTube Live, or Periscope. And
cheers.
Tim cheerses you with his Catholic Answers mug. Cheerses.
Yes.
I made that up.
I did have one thing to add.
I bet it has to do with scapegoating. You cannot let go of that question. Okay, go ahead.
I couldn't. You know what? It's one of those times where I think senility is setting in. I could not remember. It's Leviticus chapter 16. And so for the person who wrote in that obviously is an excellent a type of Jesus Christ, because if you look at Leviticus chapter 16, the high priest lays hands on the sheep and symbolically lays all the sins of the people on the scapegoat and sends it out into the wilderness.
Uh-huh.
So that's an excellent type of Jesus Christ who takes upon himself all of our sins. So, you know, I was a little hung up on the whole idea of him being let go.
Yeah.
But
the
bearing the sins part is definitely a type of Jesus. So thanks for that. Now it's stuck in my head, Leviticus 16.
And now what's stuck in my head is they finally found the name of the person who asked the question.
Yes.
It was Elizabeth. Is that right?
Elizabeth
1089. Ask the question.
Excellent.
She may be a robot. I don't know if she has a number in her name. But Robert on Facebook now asks, wants to know, to what extent does Satan know what we're thinking?
Yes.
I heard somewhere that Satan only knows what we're thinking when he hears us speak. In other words, he cannot read our thoughts. Reading thoughts is God's exclusive ability. Is that accurate?
Yes and no. There's an awesome work by St. Thomas Aquinas called De Malo on evil. And it is an eye-opener. I've also had a chance to talk with a demonologist about this. And so I know the sort of the line for a lot of folks is, well, the devil can't read our thoughts. He only has access to our imagination. That is a gross oversimplification.
Oh.
Because of human nature, we cannot have thoughts without the intermingling of our imaginations. Because the very act of thinking, when I look at Psy, I see human being. I see a human being. My intellect abstracts the form of manness into my mind. But what is attached to that is Psy, the individual, and my imagination, where all of those things are put together into something that, you know, we could paint a picture of Cy Kellett.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult concept here. But by the way, this is one of the reasons why we need to pray that God would guard our hearts and minds in Christ Jesus, as Philippians 4 talks about in Philippians 4, verses 4 through 6, that your hearts and minds would be guarded in Jesus Christ. Because actually, when you're talking about thoughts, St. Thomas points out, this is the domain of the devil. The devil and the angels, the good angels and bad angels, that's how they communicate. They don't have lips and mouths. They don't form syllables. Their language is purely intellectual. So when we're thinking, actually, that's, you know, if you think real hard, the devil will say, stop, you're yelling at me, you know, because that's his domain. But the key is, though, he doesn't have access to the core of our intellect and will, where we make decisions and such. He's getting a sort of a photographic sort of series of images. And only in our innermost being do we have the fullness of our thoughts with God. And God alone knows them in the most intimate of ways. But to say that they don't know our thoughts, the devil doesn't know our thoughts at all, is really a dangerous oversimplification, because, you know, it lends itself toward, okay, if I don't move my lips, he doesn't know. And that is certainly not true. In fact, I think I told you this story before. I have a dear friend, Matthew Arnold, who used to work with me at St. Joseph Communications, great guy, convert. And one of the ways he converted Cy was he was in a rock band. And do you remember I shared this? He was in a rock band, and they were dabbling in the occult. And they started experiencing these preternatural manifestations. And so one day he invited his then girlfriend, who was a nominal Catholic, wasn't really serving God, but was a Catholic, to come to one of their like seances where they conjure up spirits and such and channel spirits. Because Matthew was kind of, you know, there's weird stuff happening, but I don't think I believe this all the way. It was kind of a lark that ended up, they got in over their heads. Well, they go, they hold hands, they're doing their incantations. They're getting books from the library on the occult and such. Don't do this, folks. And so they began to do their incantations, and one of the guys would go into this kind of ecstasy and begin to channel spirits. And as this started happening, my friend Matthew's now wife, then was girlfriend, started freaking out because she felt the presence of evil. She's like, this is not good. I should not be here. We should not be here. So without saying anything to anyone, she started praying Hail Marys. Not moving her lips, just in her mind. And as she starts praying these Hail Marys, the guy who was channeling spirits looks right at her and says, that effing bee, and didn't put it that way, cannot help you. And she said fear just went from her head to her toes. She was like, Matthew, we are leaving now. And actually that encounter brought both of them, her back to her faith and Matthew Arnold to the Catholic faith. They went and saw a priest and such. But I bring that up because any demonologist or someone who's been involved, an exorcist, for example, will tell you that that is an oversimplification. Mm-hmm. You don't want to fall into that trap. We do have to understand the devil is powerful. Now, he's nothing next to Jesus Christ and to God. He's nothing to be feared whatsoever. We do not fear him, but we respect his nature. Yeah. And his power, and we have to be leery of that.
I don't think I've ever heard that story before, actually.
Okay, well, now you have, and you won't forget it.
No, I won't. I won't. Did they come out with white hair from that? We're taking questions from Facebook Live, YouTube Live, and Periscope this hour and next. Next hour, Jimmy Akin will be here with us. It will still be open form. So your questions remain welcome. This question comes from Connie on Facebook Live, Tim. Can you explain why priests are to live chaste lives? I recently had someone tell me that the Catholic Church is the reason why so many priests stray and have relationships with other people and abuse children.
You know, that's another popular myth. In fact, what was our good friend from Penn State University that wrote the book Priests and Pedophiles, The Anatomy of a Crisis? What was his name? Philip Jenkins. Dr. Philip, great book. I read it back in 2001. He did extensive research on this whole quote-unquote pedophile crisis. And it parts are comical because in one section, he talks about a 40-year study that was done by the Archdiocese of Chicago on the pedophilia crisis. And it was when the actual information was gathered, he said there was actually only one case of actual pedophilia. It was mostly a feebophilia, which is
teenagers.
Relationship with post-pubescent teenagers.
Yeah.
And he says in the book, were it not for this one sad case, there would have been an absolute lack of actual pedophilia in the pedophilia crisis of the Archdiocese of Chicago. The problem was actually homosexuality, but of course the culture can't say there's anything wrong with homosexuality because we say it's normal as a culture, right? But that was really the issue, at least for the Archdiocese of Chicago. Now, there have been pedophilia problems and so forth, and one case is one case far too many. But the point is, in Dr. Philip Jenkins' book, he did extensive research and found, number one, the percentage of priests actually involved is extremely low. We're talking like 1.7% versus in Protestant ministry, it's actually much higher. It's not even close. It's like three times higher.
And most ministers are married.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, most pedophiles are married. Most, it's father with daughter and such. Right. I mean, it's this thing got so blown out of proportion, number one, even on the numbers. But number two, Celibacy has nothing to do with it. I mean, when you're talking about pedophilia, you're talking about a sickness. This is not, even secular psychologists will tell you, this isn't even the normal sexual sort of deviancy like adultery or fornication or masturbation. This is a sickness. This is about power and control. Right. And these people really need some serious psychological help. All right. But now, when it comes to actual celibacy, what you find is celibacy is not part of the problem. It's part of the answer. Celibacy is a great gift to the church, and it is needed so desperately now because of the fact that we live in the midst of a sexually crazed culture where, oh my gosh, just go out and look at the billboards, open a magazine, turn on the TV. Celibacy is an eschatological sign for us today. When we see Pope St. John Paul the Great, Mother Teresa, St. Teresa of Calcutta, we see lived out in their lives the fact that sex dies when we do. Love is eternal. I mean, my gosh, we're so crazy. The mentality in our culture is if you're not having sex, you're going to go crazy, right? Which is an absolute lie. What does that say to elderly couples who can't have sex anymore or people in various situations in their marriages where they can't have sexual? Oh, you must be deviant and sick because you're not. I mean, that is, it's absolutely a lie. And thanks be to God for the celibates, like I've mentioned, who are that sign to us. Love, my friends. Love, which at its core is to will the good of the other. It's completely disinterested. And by the way, this is why Plato held the love between two men to be of such a high level, is because it, not because he taught homosexuality, he didn't, but it's because it's disinterested.
Mm-hmm.
There, you're not asking for anything.
Right.
It's a love. That's kind of, you know, Plato didn't have the sense of celibacy that we do with the advent of Christ, but it's that sense of disinterested love that is God, right? God gives, he creates, he redeems, not because he's going to get anything back, but he gives because he is love. And that's what we're called to do. Even in a marriage situation where I have a conjugal relationship, we have to constantly be reminded, and our celibate brothers and sisters remind us of this, of what love is. My wife is not a sexual object for me. She is to be put up on a pedestal, and I love her, and I give myself until it hurts to her without asking anything in return. We have to remember that. So at any rate, forgive me for going on and on about this, but I do think in our modern era too often we fall prey to that myth that says, you know, that celibacy is a problem. No, my friend, celibacy is the answer. Jesus recommended it in Matthew 19:12. St. Paul recommended it in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. And I think those are two pretty good guys to take wisdom from, Jesus and St. Paul, and by the way, the Holy Spirit too.
Don't you think there's something about the 19th century, the Freudian stuff and all that?
Oh, yeah.
It polluted our society with ideas that in a weird way have now been proven, yes. No, that's not how the psyche works. But yet people are still poisoned with that idea that any kind of repression means I'm losing my humanity or something.
Yes, it is incredible how we have ended up lowering humanity to the level of the lower appetites and to the animal, the level when it's our intellect and our will and our ability to rise above our appetites and passions that makes us human.
Thank you, Tim Staples.
All right, brother. God bless you.
Next hour, more Open Forum. Jimmy Akin will be here to take your questions from Facebook Live, YouTube Live, and Periscope. We'll be right back.